Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
I just want to read one sloka from the Nectar of Instruction, which is very pertinent to today's slogan. So this is from the Nectar of Instruction, text number 8.
Tanna-mārupā-tari-thādi-sukhir-tanānhu Smriccho-kramin-rasana-manasi-niyojhā Tishtandra-jetad-dhan-hu-dhāgi-janan-dhinan-nu-ghami Kalannaya-lakhyalam-mitupadesha-saram.
So Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī says, the essence of all advice is that one should utilize one's full time, 24 hours a day, in nicely chanting and remembering the Lord's divine name, transcendental form, qualities, and eternal pastimes, thereby gradually engaging one's tongue and mind. In this way, one should reside in Braja, Goloka Vrindavan Dham, and serve Krishna under the guidance of devotees. One should follow in the footsteps of the Lord's beloved devotees who are deeply attached to his devotional service. So, we will be speaking a little bit about that verse by Rupa Goswami today. There we go, thank you very much. Can I get a bag of the Gita as well? So today's verse is text number 12 from Canto 11, chapter 12.
Tanna vidhan mayano sangha vadha
Tanna vidhan mayano sangha vadha
Diya sammatmanam manastate dham
Diya sammatmanam manastate dham
Yata samadho manayo ditayo tayo Nadyaha pravishta riva namarupe Ta
They, the gopis
Na
Not
Avidhan
We're aware of
Mayi
In me
Anasangha
By intimate contact
Badha,
bound up.
Diya,
their consciousness.
Svam,
their own.
Atmanam,
body or self.
Adha,
something remote.
Tata,
that's considering.
Idam,
that which is most near.
Yata,
just as.
Samadho,
in yoga samadhi.
Munaya,
great sages.
Abdi,
of the ocean.
Toye,
in the water.
Nadyaha,
rivers.
Paravishtaha,
having entered.
Eva,
like.
Nama,
names.
Rupe,
and forms.
Translation.
My dear Uddhava, just as great sages in yoga trance merge into self-realization, like rivers merging into the ocean, and are thus not aware of material names and forms. Similarly, the gopis of Vrindavan were so completely attached to me within their minds that they could not think of their own bodies or of this world or of their future lives. Their entire consciousness was simply bound up in me. Purport. The words Svam Atmanam Adastatitam indicate that while for ordinary persons one's personal body is the most dear, is the most near and dear thing, the gopis consider their own bodies to be distant and remote, just as a yogi in samadhi trance considers ordinary things around his physical body or his physical body itself to be most remote. When Krishna played on his flute late at night, the gopis immediately forgot everything about their so-called husbands and children and went to dance with Lord Krishna in the forest. These controversial points have been clearly explained in the book Krishna by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The basic explanation is that Lord Krishna is the source of everything, and the gopis are the Lord's own potency. Thus there is no discrepancy or immorality in the almighty personality of Godhead's loving affairs with His own manifest potency, the gopis, who happen to be the most beautiful young girls in the creation of God. There is no illusion on the part of the gopis, for they are so attracted to Lord Krishna that they do not care to think of anything else. Since all existence is situated within the body of Lord Krishna, there is no loss for the gopis when they concentrate on the Lord. It is the nature of very deep love to exclude all objects except the beloved. However, in the material world, where we try to love a limited temporary object such as our nation, family, or personal body, our exclusion of other objects constitutes ignorance. But when our love is intensely concentrated on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the origin of everything, such concentration cannot be considered ignorance or small-mindedness. The example of the sages in Samadhi is given here only to illustrate exclusive concentration on a single object. Otherwise, there is no comparison between the ecstatic love of the gopis and the dry meditation of the yogis, who merely try to understand that they are not their material bodies. Since the gopis had no material bodies to become detached from and were personally dancing with and embracing the absolute truth, one can never compare the exalted position of the gopis to that of mere yogis. It is stated that the bliss of impersonal Brahman realization cannot be compared to even an atomic fragment of the blissful ocean of love of Krishna. Intimate attachment is like a strong rope that binds the mind and heart. In material life we are bound to that which is temporary and illusory, and therefore such binding in the heart causes great pain. However, if we bind our minds and hearts to the eternal Lord Krishna, the reservoir of all pleasure and beauty, then our hearts will expand unlimitedly in the ocean of transcendental bliss. One should understand that the gopis were not in any way inclined towards impersonal meditation in which one denies the reality of variegated creation. The gopis did not deny anything. They simply loved Krishna and could not think of anything else. They only rejected whatever impeded their concentration on Lord Krishna, cursing even their own eyelids, which blinked, and thus removed Krishna from their sight for a split second. Srila Rupa Goswami has stated that all sincere devotees of the Lord should have the courage to remove from their lives anything that impedes their progressive march back home, back to Godhead. Translation. My dear Uddhava, just as great sages in yoga trance merge into self-realization like rivers merging into the ocean and are thus not aware of material names and forms. Similarly, the gopis of Vrindavan were so completely attached to me within their minds, they could not think of their own bodies or of this world or of their future lives. Their entire consciousness was simply bound up in me. So here in this particular section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna himself is explaining the topmost state of transcendental life, which is exemplified by the gopis of Vrindavan. So here it describes that the gopis of Vrindavan, their minds had their minds were completely devoid of any thoughts of material existence, and they were completely absorbed in transcendence, spiritual life. And therefore, they have been compared to great yogis who merge into the trance of samadhi, or the trance of self-realization. there are certain points here, of course, which are can be misunderstood or imitated without proper knowledge, or rejected as being inferior. So Lord Krishna himself is explaining how the gopis are situated in the topmost trance of spiritual realization and spiritual condition, state of existence. Yet even though Krishna is explaining this in the this of course is the Uddhava Gita. Here we have the Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna spoke to Arjuna the essence of spiritual life in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is, although it is the ABCs, we find that it is still very rare that people in this world understand Krishna's instructions in the Bhagavad Gita. That's the preliminary understanding of spiritual life. We learn what is the Supreme Lord, what is the living entity, the difference between the infinitesimal living entity and the unlimited Supreme Lord. We learn how the living entity is caught in the cycle of karma, action and reaction, under the influence of time, which is controlled by the Supreme Lord. So there is the Lord, the Jiva, time, material energy, and what was it? Karma. Five different aspects of understanding which should be there. In order for someone to have an understanding of spiritual life, they need to understand those five things. What is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? What is my own nature as the tiny little servant of God? How I am trapped in the cycle of karma under the influence of time and the material energy. So these things have to be understood. So that is the Bhagavad Gita, which is spoken by Krishna to Arjuna. Now here, this is called the Uddhava Gita, which is actually the supplement or the postgraduate study of the Bhagavad Gita. So many of the verses of the Bhagavad Gita are given greater understanding here. So it is a very, very difficult subject matter, especially for those who haven't comprehended even the Bhagavad Gita. Naturally, because people reject and cannot understand and misunderstand information which is given in the Bhagavad Gita, then it is not possible for them to accept, you know, these teachings here. The basic principle here, though, is that if we fix our mind, our attachment, our heart is fixed on objects in the material world, that's where our love and attachment is directed. We're actually fixing our consciousness on something which is temporary and illusory, and therefore we must suffer. There must be pain, and a lot of it. That is the nature of material existence. We give our entire heart to something which disappears like a mirage in the desert. You see a person who is thirsty, dying for want of water in the desert, and they give their whole energy and intelligence somehow to chase that mirage, and of course when they get there they see there was nothing there. They're very painful, very horrible existence. So material life is like that. There's an illusion that somewhere in the material world there's happiness. but it is illusory, and even if we somehow become satisfied that yes, that happiness is illusory, but I am such a fool and a rascal, I will take it that I am happy. Even if we do that, that even that is taken away because it's temporary. So as Srila Prabhupada points out, that the proof that the people of this world are all fools and rascals is that they claim to be happy, because he gives the example that if you look at a sign and the sign says no admittance, right? Don't come in here to do any business. No admittance. So a rascal, I'm going in there, I'm going to do my business, whatever. Like that. There's a rascal, he's a fool. So Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita that if you go from the highest planetary system down to the lowest planetary system, they're all places of misery. Right? If you want happiness, you'll not find it in the material world. But the rascal says, oh no, I'm happy. The fool, the rascal, oh no, I'm happy, I'm very happy. So, but it's not possible, because it is temporary place. The material energy is personified by Durga. Her very business is to constantly harass the living entities with suffering. That's her business. So if we give our hearts to objects of the material world, we're in ignorance. We're very, very foolish. As well as being foolish, we're being rascals, because all the scriptures of the world, not just Bhagavad Gita, tell us that we don't belong in this material world. We actually belong in this spiritual world with the Supreme Lord, serving Him in love. All of the scriptures will tell us, whether you're a Buddhist or a Christian or a Muslim or a Hindu, they're all saying, this material world is a temporary place of suffering, and the goal is to go towards the spiritual life. So, we see that the full, the proof that the world is full of fools and rascals is that everyone is completely absorbed, completely fixed in their mind and their heart and attachment to enjoying the material world. There are rare souls who realize the nature of material existence, the futility of trying to find happiness in the material world, and they search out how to attain liberation from material existence. Yogis and jnanis. So they become absorbed after many, many lifetimes of trying to understand the nature of the spirit soul, the eternal living entity situated within the body, and they can understand, I am not this body, I have nothing to do with material existence, I am a tiny spiritual entity. And they try to, the yogis and jnanis, practice different austerities and detachment and renunciation and vows in order to disassociate themselves with any material activity and any material thought, and they completely absorb themselves in contemplation on the spiritual self. And some of the more advanced yogis also have information on the super soul, the super self. Although, unfortunately, many of those become bewildered and misidentify the tiny spirit soul as being non-different from the super soul. Still, those yogis and jnanis, they become completely, they forget, they close down the consciousness, the awareness of their bodily existence and anything related to the body. So the gopis here are compared to some degree just to those yogis. Generally, because Krishna is trying to express the point here that there is a comparison in the sense that try to understand the single-pointed concentration of the gopis on spirit and not matter. That is where there's a comparison. Generally, because people in this world, they may have some little understanding of jnanis and yogis, how they fix their mind with this single pointed meditation on spirit and never distracted or becoming absorbed or attached to anything material, even their own body. So people can understand that. So therefore Krishna is drawing their attention that they at least understand this point about the gopis. As Krishna says in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that as a lamp in a windless place remains steady, similarly the one whose mind is mind and senses are controlled, that yogi, that saintly person, can remained fixed in their trance of self-realization. So, a very nice analogy. We see, you know, if you have a candle and there is no wind, then that candle remains steady. And if there is a strong breeze, it can blow out that flame. So, for a yogi, if they completely dispel any thoughts of enjoying the body in material life, then they can remain fixed like a lamp in a steady place in their trance of self-realization. And as soon as any thoughts of enjoying material existence, enjoying the material body, enter within their mind, then immediately their trance of self-realization is snuffed out, just like a lamp in the wind, just like a flame in the wind. And we see that with great sages such as Vishwamrita, who meditated in order to be like that lamp in the in a place without wind. He meditated under the ocean, under the water for, was it the ocean or river?
Yeah.
River, for 60,000 years. And then but he allowed just a little thought of sense gratification to enter. I think he saw two fish mating, and he allowed that thought, as Maharaj was saying when he gave the initiation lecture, that if you have unwanted guests, if you feed them, they will never leave, they will stay and they'll become fat and happy. But if you don't feed them unwanted guests, they will leave. So material desires are like that, be very careful not to feed them, not to encourage them, and that way they will go away. But as soon as you encourage them, all havoc breaks loose. So Krishna is pointing out that there, because people can understand perhaps the yogis and the jnanis to this point, their single pointed fixed attention on the trance of self-realization, the gopis are certainly at the very least comparable to those great yogis, because they had no conception, no connection at all, 24 hours a day, ever, on awareness of their own existence. Their only thought was transcendence. Their only thought was Krishna. And therefore, we see, as described here in the purport, that when Krishna played his flute in the dead of night, that the gopis, they just immediately ran to Krishna to offer him transcendental service. They had no conception of what will our husband say, what will the neighbors say, what will society say, how much we will be condemned, how much we will suffer in our next life. They had no thought of it. In their enthusiastic rush to just immediately go to Krishna to serve, knowing that he wanted them to serve him in a particular way, as they were dressing, they would put their clothes on, the top half on the bottom part, and the bottom part on the top half, and makeup on half their face, and all their clothes. They had no real, just completely, their only thought was completely absorbed in going immediately to Krishna. There's no real external consciousness. There was nothing else other than that. A single pointed, absolutely fixed. But of course, the gopis, their trance of God consciousness was far exceeded. That's about where the comparison really ends. That single pointed concentration. we have to, as Krishna will point out here in this chapter, there are other features of the gopis' transcendental elevated position, known as Mahabhava, Adiruddha Mahabhava, the absolute topmost level of spiritual trance, samadhi, and bliss. For one, of course, the gopis didn't have a material body. The yogis and the jnanis are still have a material body, which they are trying to become detached from, and they do successfully. Some, you know, they're actually, the gopis had no material; they didn't have a material body. So we certainly have to be careful, you know, not to compare them as ordinary persons in a material body trying to attain liberation. The gopis were already nityasiddha or eternally liberated, all of these gopis. As described in the purports previously, that some of these gopis in their previous lives were great sages and yogis who were in the Dandakaranya forest, and they achieved the perfection in their spiritual practices and by association with the devotees of the Lord and the Lord himself, they achieved taking a birth in a spiritual body to associate with the eternally liberated associates of the Lord, gopis, from the spiritual world, and to associate with the Supreme Lord himself, to associate with Srimati Radharani, Krishna's own internal spiritual pleasure potency. In this way, they were already on the platform of Nityasiddha, even those Dandakaranya sages who are now gopis in this life, what to speak of, you know, those gopis who were, you know, eternally reside in the spiritual world and, you know, come down here just to give association to those who are being elevated to the spiritual platform. So they didn't have material bodies. Also, generally the jnanis and the yogis, they are embracing the impersonal spiritual effulgence, which is just the effulgence of the Lord. He's the effulgence emanating from the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, that is the Brahma Jyoti. Generally the yogis and jnanis, they can be very attracted to that impersonal feature, but they have no realization and no real attachment to or relationship with the Bhagavan feature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the very source of the Brahma, you know, Brahma Jyoti, the Brahman effulgence. Some of the yogis become a little bit more advanced. They become attached to the Paramatma feature of the Lord, or the Vishnu, the Super Soul, who manifests as the we have Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Shiradakshaya Vishnu, the Super Soul of material creation, the Super Soul within each universe, and the Super Soul within the heart of each living entity. Some yogis actually become attached to this Paramatma feature. Again, that Paramatma feature exists as an expansion of the Lord for maintaining material creation. But the Paramatma feature does not actually expand activities in the spiritual world. There, the Paramatma feature is again withdrawn and eternally resides within the form of Narayan, who does expand activities in the spiritual world. So certainly the gopis who are attached to the topmost feature of transcendental existence, Bhagavan, are more elevated than the jnanis and the yogis who have no real conception of Bhagavan, but who may be attached to the impersonal effulgence of the Lord or his expansion as Vishnu to maintain material creation, but they do not really have that understanding or attachment or relationship with Bhagavan. So in that way the comparison fails. Also the jnanis and yogis are, you know, where the comparison also fails is that they are searching for their own happiness. It may be happiness through liberation from material existence, but they are actually searching for the fulfillment of their own desire. It is better than those who have the fools and the rascals, as we say, in material existence, who are trying to satisfy material desires. But still, you know, it is, they are trying to fulfill their own particular desire and attain their own spiritual happiness. Whereas the gopis, they have no personal desire, and their desire is to somehow increase the happiness or the transcendental bliss of the Supreme Lord through their pure, loving, devotional service. So again, on that platform there can be no comparison. Also, as we've heard in previous verses, that the although it is certainly commendable to, you know, search for liberation from material existence, that type of activity, it is pleasing to the Lord to some degree, but it can never control the Lord. It can never fully attract the Lord with those activities. They are recommended. It is certainly the path that the Lord is pushing one on, but what actually attracts the Lord, so much so that he becomes willing to be you know, under the control of his devotee, is that when the devotee has no personal desire except to love the Lord and perform service that pleases the Lord, pure devotional service. That activity is very attractive to the Lord, and he agrees to actually reciprocate he agrees to become controlled by that loving service. So again, on that platform there, we would see that there's no real comparison with the yogis. Now, one point here, of course, as we explained, is that people generally, even yogis and jnanis, they cannot understand the Bhagavan feature of the Lord. They cannot accommodate that. They think that spiritual existence means unlimited, without the limitations of time and space as we find in the material world. If spiritual life means everything is unlimited, then they think that how can there be form in spiritual existence, which tends to appear to limit, you know, it creates a limit. Just like, you know, when you have a localized form, you know, the very concept of form appears to take up a certain amount of space. You know, it doesn't form doesn't appear to be in all places, in all time. It seems to be, you know, in a certain space, in a certain shape. So that doesn't appear to be unlimited. It appears to be limited by time and space. But actually the forms of the spiritual realm, non-different from the form of the Lord in the sense, although His form is unlimited, but the forms of all living entities, they are completely spiritual. Although there's a form, there's still no influence of time or space acting upon those forms. It is a very difficult concept to conceive of, but one has to appreciate the nature of spiritual existence, that although there is no influence of time and space, that does not mean that does not reduce the unlimited nature of the spiritual existence. Because the spiritual existence means unlimited, there is unlimited bliss, there is unlimited variety, there is unlimited everything, there is no limitation. Spiritual existence means no limitation. If we say, well, there cannot be form in spiritual existence, we placed a limitation. The spiritual life is, spiritual existence is unlimited. So therefore you can have form. If we say there's no variety in spiritual existence, then we have limited spiritual existence. The spiritual existence has unlimited variety. If we say there can be no activity in spiritual existence, then we have limited spiritual existence. So spiritual existence means these things are there, unlimited variety, unlimited different forms, unlimited different activities, unlimited desires, but all pure, without any tinge of material sense gratification, lust, greed, anger, envy, and without any influence of the modes of material nature, without any influence of time or space. This is all enacted by the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because God desires it, therefore it is there. And nothing can stop it. One may say, but that's contradictory. That there can be form and yet everything is unlimited. And the Christian says, no, that's what I want. I will have that. I will have unlimited activity, unlimited form. And that is the nature of God. As soon as we say, God cannot do that, then, what is the definition of God? If we accept the definition of God, we have to understand that, what He wants will be manifest. I will have form, I will have activity, I will have variety, and everything will be unlimited without a tinge of time and space. So there it is. So, therefore, it is very, very difficult for people to understand the form of the Lord, what to speak of His activities. It's even more inconceivable. All the forms of His associates as the gopis, we wouldn't expect. People may think that, when you think of heaven, you have all these people wearing white sheets with little light bulbs on their heads, walking around like this, and they're like great sages and yogis who are always sitting in a trance with a smile on their face, and they don't do anything. But you wouldn't expect that the spiritual world is full of the most beautiful women in all creation. The whole nature of spiritual life is always don't associate with the opposite sex. When you get to the spiritual world, the most beautiful women, the most beautiful men, everything is super excellent and attractive. But nor would you expect that the Supreme Lord will be dancing with these beautiful women, and they will be hugging and kissing and so many different activities that lovers would do. One would not expect that. But the nature of spiritual existence is that, you know, again, if we say spiritual existence is unlimited, if you have a relationship, it immediately limits. You know, just like if you get married. If you get married, you have a relationship with your husband or your wife, and therefore it means you are not married to every other woman on the planet. Unless, you know, you live in Vedic times where you may marry more than one wife. If you have, you know, children, you know, they are your children, and others, you know, are in a different family. So relationships generally mean some limitation. But in spiritual existence, relationships are there, but there's no limitation. Again, unlimited variety of relationships, which are grouped into five principal categories: that of neutrality, that of serving with love, that of friendliness, friendship with love, that of parenthood, literally looking after the beloved, and that of the conjugal love. These relationships are there, and of course the most difficult to understand is that of the gopis, who are, you know, lovers of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So generally, because people cannot conceive of the form of the Lord, the activities of the Lord, the nature of spiritual existence, when they think in terms of spiritual advancement, they may think in terms of yogis and jnanis who are hidden away in the caves of the Himalayas and meditating like that. But you know, that's just the bare beginning of spiritual existence. It's just on the threshold. They've really just stepped out of material existence, but they haven't gone anywhere on the spiritual, spiritual realms or spiritual activities. After material existence finishes, spiritual existence, spiritual activities, loving relationships manifest unlimitedly. Just to step out of material existence, that is nirvana. Cessation of material existence. But then you go forward into spiritual existence, spiritual activities, relationships. So because people can understand perhaps up to the sages who have ceased material existence, but they have no understanding of activities in spiritual existence, therefore they write off the activities of Krishna and the gopis as being immoral activities, something to do with the material world. Nothing to do with material. So they can, it must be a material activity, and if it's a material activity, it's immoral. Because a young man, you know, calls others' wives into the forest in the dead of night to dance and to be romantically attached to them, that is certainly, you know, an abominable activity in material existence. But again, if we understand the fact that the gopis, in fact all the residents of the spiritual world, have spiritual bodies which are manifested by Krishna's spiritual energy. They have spiritual forms. Their spiritual activities are also under the influence of Krishna's spiritual energy acting under his will. So Krishna, when he enjoys with any person on the spiritual platform in one of the five principal relationships, rasas, he's actually reciprocating with his own internal spiritual potency, which is manifesting in unlimited varieties of forms and activities. There's no question that he is dancing with others' wives, or
He is dancing with his own spiritual pleasure potency. And all the living entities who have been elevated to reciprocate the pleasure potency with the Supreme Lord. It has nothing to do with mundane morality. But people, what to speak of these spiritual matters, people cannot even understand some of the preliminary activities in spiritual life. Just like, you know, around the world we have Gurukul, which is Gurukul is for training children, teaching them from the very beginning of life all these principles of spiritual life, how to be properly situated in the material world and at the same time make rapid advancement on the spiritual path. That is Gurukul. But generally when people of this world they look at our Gurukuls, they become very critical. Even these preliminary activities, they can become very critical. That, you know, there's too much austerity. You know, that they may be missing out on television, and you know, they don't see video hits, and you know, they miss out on the fashions and this, that, and the other. Which is what Srila Prabhupada calls the devil quoting scripture. He says, we have a society all around the world where they condone the killing of children within the womb, abortion, and contraceptives, and so many heinous demoniac activities. And yet if a child is taught some austerity in spiritual life from the beginning, so this is the devil quoting scripture, citing, you know, morality and what have you. And they do this even with Krishna, with God's own activities. Oh, God cannot do this. And they quote their scriptures and their mundane morality and this and that, the other. We you know, live by daily enjoying, you know, the remnants of slaughtered animals. We enjoy unlimited illicit sex at the loss of millions of little children slaughtered within the womb. We enjoy illicit sex at the cost of millions of families who are destroyed by those activities. We enjoy all sorts of intoxication to help us to get through the misery of, you know, our self-created miseries. And yet they will dare to say, God, your activities are immoral. I do not approve. So, anyway, if we skip past the the barking of the dogs, and we get a proper understanding of Krishna's activities, as I say, the dogs will bark, but the caravan goes on. If we properly understand, take the time to understand the activities of Krishna with his gopis, they actually manifest in all degrees the topmost situation of material existence. And they are, Krishna is here, as we see in this last statement of Rupa Goswami. He says, Rupa Goswami stated that all sincere devotees of the Lord should have the courage to remove from their lives anything that impedes their progressive march back home, back to Godhead. So, the gopis here, they have no thought of enjoying anything in material existence. Now, for that, That concept for many people is a very scary thought. And immediately they'll be thinking, well, no sex, no intoxication, no meat, no candy, no sense gratification. Oh, where's the exit? Oh, there it is. But basically, the message from Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita and the gopis and all the devotees of the Lord is that when it comes to enjoying material life, which the center is sex life, forget about it. Just forget about it and have the courage to do that. That's the message. Just forget about it. But actually, just don't make, whatever plans there are to make sure you're happy in the material world, put it aside, forget about it, go on. And, dedicate oneself to spiritual life. That actually takes a lot of courage. And we generally find, not generally, but is a very rare person who has that courage. So, I was actually, the other day I was doing the puja for Srila Prabhupada, and I was meditating on his spiritual strength and courage, to do what he did in spiritual life. But it applies across the board, for all devotees. Actually, to take the spiritual life, and of course that's what's called Shraddha or faith, to place your faith in the instructions of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, to tread the path of literally beginning the process of forgetting material existence and becoming single-pointedly absorbed in serving the Supreme Lord with love. That is Shraddha, and knowing that by that activity everything will automatically be accomplished, and that will be my ultimate success and perfection. That is faith, and that faith, to have that faith and to follow that, takes a lot of courage. In this world we see there are people who are proclaimed to be very, very brave, courageous people. They put on their helmets and they get their machine guns and they go off to some other country and they kill all the villages and what have you, and they sit in their planes and press a button and bombs come down and massacre millions of people that they cannot even see. We generally think that that is courage. People get in a boxing ring and they go 10 rounds with Muhammad Ali and always so brave. But even if you take the bravest of those brave, when it comes to spiritual life, there's not a speck of courage, real courage, to tread that path of devotional service. That is the most courageous. So, but whereas, love and attachment in the material world is forgetfulness, which is based on illusion and therefore causes pain, the gopis, they're manifesting this Adiruddha Mahabhava, which is forgetfulness in complete knowledge. That is a whole different ball game. Forget material existence does not mean we become negligent. It means there's a word here which is badha. Generally, the word badha means to be captivated, conditioned, or controlled like that. Here, badha Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that Badha means that in that state of forgetting material existence, one's intelligence becomes more enthusiastic in the ways of pleasing the Supreme Lord. One becomes captivated by the Lord. So here we're captivated by the material energy and our intelligence becomes very enthusiastic how to enjoy. But the same Badha, captivation, is forgetfulness with the intelligence working at its supreme spiritual state. And that intelligence, when it is forgotten material existence, you know, intelligence is no longer pursuing this and pursuing that and confused and, you know, distracted and by so many ridiculous things in the material world, the intelligence, one point, how to please God. We know ourselves, you know, if you want to do something, you want to be a footballer, if you want to be an accountant, you know, if you can block everything out and just, you know, you study, you work, you just put your intelligence just into that, you become really good. You know, I tell my children that, you know, if you just find one thing and stick to it, you're bound to become an expert. You know, you just get that, whatever it is, you just stick to it. Eventually you become an expert. So when the intelligence is single-pointed like that, that is the position of the gopi. So they're so captivated by the Supreme Lord that their intelligence is only working just to please Him. So it is forgetfulness with knowledge. That is the difference. We should never, you know, assume that the forgetfulness of the gopis and imitate that. Yes, I will be forgetful of material existence. But if our spiritual intelligence is not working, it will just make a mess both of spiritual life and material life. Once Srila Gaurav Kishore Das Babaji was in the Dharma Mayapur, and one so-called devotee trying to imitate an advanced devotee, he was sitting there chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And while he was there, there was a field, you know, where they had an orchard and apples and what have you, where they used to collect the fruits for the temple and what have you. So while he's chanting, the cows came into the you know, the field and started eating all the trees and the apples and the fruits. But he's thinking, oh, you know, I am forgetfulness of everything else, said the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So, you know, Gaurav Kishore Das Babaji chastising. You know, you're a rascal. You know, you're imitating advanced devotee, but actually you're manifesting your complete neglect and complete unconcern for the happiness of the Lord. You see? So, this platform should not be imitated. Actual forgetfulness of material existence will manifest when one's intelligence is very, very keenly fixed on how to serve the Lord according to the Bhagavad Gita and according to the Acharyas. That manifests real forgetfulness of material existence. If one feigns, oh yes, I'm not interested in material existence, and there's no intelligence how to please the Lord, then that is simply an imitation, an affectation, as they say. Similarly, pretense trying to imitate advanced words. So there are, just like as we began in the very beginning, forgetfulness of material existence doesn't mean that we ever forget that this place is a place of misery. It's not that sort of forgetfulness, and therefore go on with our sense gratification. Yes, you know, I am completely aloof. I am absorbed in spiritual life. I am forgetful of anything else except the here and now. This is my spiritual platform. Because actually, a lot of swamis, they teach like that. There was one, Maya Baba, Anyone heard of Maya Baba? So you're all traveling in spiritual circles. He was many years ago. He was a very famous yogi and had many, many followers. A few of the original disciples of Srila Prabhupada, some of them knew of him, some of them followed him. He didn't speak for about 10 years, and he used to write things down, so he took a vow. And his philosophy was, he actually introduced the philosophy, don't worry, be happy. Right. So forget about your anxieties. Very popular these days. Just forget about your anxieties. Be happy, and that is the spiritual platform. But actually, he actually died in a car accident because he failed to remember that you can't forget about the fact that you're in the material world and it is a place of suffering. You can't just say forget about your anxieties and you'll be happy. One, you have to understand that the material world is a place of suffering. Forget about trying to enjoy it, therefore. But don't forget, and don't ever, if you always remember the spiritual world is a place of suffering, you can forget about trying to enjoy it. That sort of forgetfulness. And never forget what is the real source of happiness, and that is the supreme service to the Supreme Lord. There are, yogis who, like the Gyanis, and many people these days follow pseudo gurus. Such as Maharishi and there's TM and this and that, and they also teach this trying to forget the problems of material existence by developing some sort of mystic cities and perfection in yoga. But actually, so therefore you see with TM they try to levitate. So I don't know if you've ever seen documentaries, and you see them, and they have a room, and they're sitting there, and there's all these mats, and they're sort of sitting in a squat leg position, and they're trying to bounce and remain in the air. So you see all these. Have you ever seen that? They sit like that, and they sort of bounce up and try and sort of remain in the air. They do that for hours and hours, thinking that one day they will levitate like a yogi. So, really they're creating a lot of suffering because, they'll never attain those mystic cities by such a bogus practice, so that'll certainly cause them a lot of pain, apart from the fact that they realise their bank account's been emptied out of the whole, in order to pay for all the bogus mantras and procedures. And that they've worked hard, for nothing and made a complete ass out of themselves, and they'll be, in front of all their friends and relatives. Even if they actually followed some bona fide yoga process and attained mystic cities, absorption in enjoying those mystic cities, again, is like the wind that blows out the lamp of self-realization. Again, one becomes distracted from the real goal of realizing that one is the eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and one's trance of self-realization is snuffed out by the hurricane of being absorbed in those mystic cities. Again, one has not achieved perfection. What to speak of the actual yogis, those bogus yogis which the world is full of, all the so-called gurus and yogis and what have you, all teaching bogus philosophies, literally they're taking people to hell. What to speak of, forget about, don't worry, be happy. They're creating unlimited worries for their followers by which they must suffer. and the gurus themselves must suffer. Hari Kesh Maharaj was saying that he followed Maharishi Yogi. He paid $35 for his mantra, which was, you know, just one word. You know, Prabhupada asked, "What is your mantra?" He said something like, it was some name of Indra or something. And brother said, "Is that it?" You know. And then Hari Kesh Maharaj was saying that, you know, all the disciples got together because everyone's supposed to have the individual mantra just for them, secret. And the Maharishi says, "Don't tell anyone or everything will be ruined." And they all secretly, you know, "What's your mantra?" They all had the same mantra. it was just the same. And Prabhupada said, "Yes, you'll all be ruined, and the guru will also be ruined when you find out." So then Hari Kesh Maharaj was telling a story that Maharishi, once they gave him 4 LSD tablets, very strong, very potent, to test, you know, how advanced he was. And nothing happened. And therefore, you know, he just stood there and, you know, didn't trip him. Didn't. So therefore, all the disciples, you know, they'll say, "This proves that he is there. He's already there. You know, he doesn't need anything to get there. He's there." And Prabhupada said, "There." Is he Prabhupada? He's already there. "Yes, he's there in hell." You know, here is a guru, you know, taking 4 LSD tablets and teaching all sorts of nonsense and completely, you know, taking him and his disciples to hell. That is the result. And they're creating. So really, you know, forgetfulness of material existence means don't try to enjoy material life, but be very aware that it's a place of suffering. And if you actually forget material existence, your intelligence will be single-pointed fixed on how to serve Krishna. And the transcendental, that love controls the Supreme Lord, and he agrees out of his great mercy to reciprocate that love. And the bliss, that nectar of that reciprocation with the Supreme Lord is you know, so powerful that there is no need for any other process to become free from material existence. The relationship, the loving relationship that is there with the Lord is so nectarian, so powerful, so wonderful, that in itself, you know, removes the necessity for any other thing in order to become completely free from material existence, and one becomes naturally captivated by the Lord, captivated by spiritual activities, by the nectarian, you know, potency of the spiritual energy itself. Therefore, as I started in the beginning, Rupa Goswami gives this advice, Nectar Instruction, text number 8, that the essence of all advice is that one should utilize one's full time, 24 hours a day, in nicely chanting and remembering the Lord's divine name, transcendental form, qualities and eternal pastimes, thereby gradually engaging one's tongue and mind. In this way, one should reside in Braja, Goloka Vrindavan Dham, and serve Krishna under the guidance of devotees. One should follow in the footsteps of the Lord's beloved devotees who are deeply attached to his devotional service. So don't follow the Maharishis and the Mayababas and all the other fools and rascals of this world. Follow the gopis. Understand the exalted position of the gopis and Arjun and you know, Subhadra and the queens of Dwarka and Uddhava. Understand Krishna's teachings to them and his dealings with them, and follow that path, and you are guaranteed to have the ultimate perfection in spiritual life. Any quick questions or comments? Yes.
How do we understand this when we are as Brother Vaishnava, we say Achinta Vela.
Yes. I'm not quite sure of the question.
I'm having to understand those two statements.
They appear to be contradictory?
I'm not able to understand it. They must be having the same point, but I'm not able to understand.
The Krishna's enjoying eternally with his...
Well, we understand that we are a part and parcel of Krishna, Achintya Veda. We have similar quality to Krishna, but we are separate individuals. We were never, we are always existing, and we always exist. So
well, Krishna, when Krishna enjoys, a natural part of enjoyment is when something is very wonderful, very enjoyable, very blissful, you want to enjoy that with all the people you love. So Krishna wants to enjoy that with his, all the tiny little spirit souls. He loves them and he wants to... that increases his enjoyment. Krishna is enjoying his own spiritual pleasure potency. And that spiritual pleasure of the Supreme Lord is unlimitedly increasing. One of the ways in which it unlimitedly increasing is that he shares that transcendental nectar with all the tiny spirit souls. So in that way he expands his enjoyment. Is very natural. You know, the very principle why, you know, the reason in the material world we have families, as you can hear, because we want to enjoy with them. Someone's out there enjoying their family. But here in the material world, of course, there is a lot of obstacles to that enjoyment. But the principle is that enjoyment, you enjoy that with others. People don't go to like a secluded place, you know, to have a picnic by themselves. They take those that they love with them to share. Or, you know, if you go on a picnic, and you take everyone with you, you don't sit there and eat everything in the picnic basket yourself, you actually share it with others. So that propensity increases your enjoyment, even though there may appear to be less food. When you see the other people enjoying that picnic basket, you actually become happy. So that's Krishna's principle as well, that he enjoys the manifestation of his spiritual existence with his the jivas or the spirit souls who are part and parcel of his spiritual energy. So is there something there? Well, because this is the nature of spiritual life, and this is the nature of material life. spiritual existence can accommodate conflicting principles harmoniously. Something may be apparently conflicting, but in spiritual life, so therefore, Krishna is one. There is nothing else, there is nothing separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Someone, they might ask the child to, maybe the mother, is there someone looking after that child? They may want to just... move a little further down the courtyard. This is an example that, you know, in family life, you know, one should not neglect one's family, or, you know, the responsibilities of family life in the name of forgetting spiritual, you know, material existence. That's artificial. It's not wanted by Krishna. Devotees should be very, very, you know, devotees who have, you know, children, husband, wife, and they're all cooperating to help each other to make spiritual advancement. They should be, their intelligence should be very, very keenly, you know, sharp in how to perform those duties as a mother, as a father, and also as a member of the society, so that, you know, everything is done very nicely. Nothing should be neglected in the name of, you know, I am forgetting material existence. We should be, you know, Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakura explains that, you know, we should be very, very attentive to all the details of our activities, apparent material and spiritual. You know, as a devotee of the Lord, we should not imitate the activities of the gopis and, you know, artificially reject, neglect or forget family members, our work, looking after the health of the body. We should not artificially neglect this, trying to make a show that I'm detached from the material world. We should have, you know, very keen intelligence, and, you know, just be right on the ball with all these things, very, very carefully. That sort of spiritual intelligence, where one is, you know, properly looking after one's family in Krishna consciousness, helping them in their spiritual life, helping all the other devotees within the community of Krishna consciousness, serving the deity, serving the guru, that sort of intelligence is the real symptom that one is actually forgetting material existence. I have to emphasize that point, because the tendency is to make a show of, yes, I am detached from the material world, I'm not thinking, and in making that show, which is all it is, but not actually being on the spiritual platform, the symptom is that one's intelligence will not be able to serve Krishna properly, and therefore one, you know, may have a family in Krishna consciousness that one neglects, or one may neglect other members of the community, or one may, you know, neglect so many different things in the name of spiritual life. Be very, very careful not to imitate that. But Krishna is one, and at the same time he is two. And, you know, he, as one, he is the absolute truth, and there is nothing else beyond that absolute truth. So that is Krishna. At the same time he is two, he manifests himself separately as Krishna and his internal pleasure potency, Śrīmatī Rādhārāṇī. At the same time, he eternally is one, and he, as Śrīmatī Rādhārāṇī and Śrī Krishna, he eternally appears in the form of Chaitanya Mahāprabhu. So he is one, he is two, at the same time, and there is no contradiction. We cannot do that. You know, in this world, you know, if something is one, it cannot be two. If it is two, it cannot be one. In the spiritual world, Krishna can be both one and many and two at the same time, and there is no contradiction because He is everything. He is the one, He is everything, and because He is everything, He is also the many.
Jai Ho Bhagavate Prabhupada.